John, good afternoon. How you doing?
Getting through it, man. Every day is, wacky and crazy and exciting because you don't know how off the rails it's going to get here in the States. But we're getting through it, man. We're getting through it as best we know how.
Yeah, we'll get to the stuff in a second because that's, you know, we've seen the United States, maybe their presence, some other people downplayed the spread a little bit at the start, and now people are starting to take it serious. How, in your certain region, in Memphis, how is it overall, and how concerned are people there?
Well, I mean, Memphis is one of those at-risk places because it's urban, and a lot of the city struggles with poverty. So, in theory, would not have access to health care. I, in fact, know of one health care provider here in the city of Memphis, very prominent health care provider, who was basically instructed not to test poor people because we don't have the resources to care for them without insurance. It's that dire. Our hospitals are not overloaded yet, but, again, I don't. It seems like that could only be a matter of time. I pray that we just have awful weather. I pray that over the next 30 days we have the worst weather we have ever had because Memphis spring is really nice. The weather is very mild. Obviously, the sun comes out, 70 degrees. People want to go to the park. And I think they're going to have to step in and shut down the parks because – people want to go outside. And they want to mingle, and we saw a little bit of that this past weekend. So, I think a lot of us are catching on, but I think as always, you're never going to have 100% cooperation. And listen, if 15% of people don't take this seriously, that could have catastrophic effects on our healthcare system. So, I think we're getting there, but we're not there yet.
Okay. And, I hope that's pretty sad when you think that, the amount of money you have might impact your ability to live or die, which is kind of crazy.
It is sad.
For sure. Now, on a positive note, you go back at now the NCAA tournament, March Madness, it's one of the tournaments that even if you're not a basketball fan, a lot of people get caught up in the hype. They enjoy it. It's a lot of fun to watch. And there is no tournament. And you've had a pretty cool stretch of articles. And your one specific that I want to talk about was This Day in Madness is what your title is about. It's when Mike became Michael Jordan. And, of course, he was with the Tar Heels with North Carolina in 1982. Mm-hmm. And technically it was yesterday. Of course, was the anniversary of it. What is it just one shot? Because, it was crunch time, really. And I saw the highlights, it's like a good shot, but what did you make? I don't know if you saw him or if you watched a lot of tape, but in that era of Michael Jordan, at college, it's funny because despite him being such a freak athlete, even then, he still wasn't the number one pick in the NBA draft.
Yeah. I mean, I think it certainly, it was a different time back then. It was a different time in college basketball because, can you imagine, whoever the number one player is in the country, right? For example, James Wiseman was the number one player in the country in 2019. He ended up going to Memphis before, obviously the NCAA stuff hit the fan. But can you imagine Penny Hardaway telling James Wiseman in 2019, hey, they're going to feature us on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and because you're a freshman, you can't be on it. I'm not going to let you be on it. I mean, he would probably quit the team that day. So it was a different time back then when freshmen, coaches did not want to, hype up their freshmen. They didn't want to, give them a big head or give them too much of a big role early on. And Michael and I think Patrick Ewing as well that year were two of the exceptions. And it's funny that they met in the title game because, like I said, typically freshmen had to wait their turn. The older guys got the big minutes. In this case, I mean, Michael Jordan was getting 30 plus minutes a game. I think he got, 38 or so in that title game. And so, I think that sort of did signal the beginning, not just of Michael and his career. And obviously, like I wrote in the piece, it was really only the beginning of what would go on to be one of the great all time professional careers in sports. I think it also signaled the landscape seismic change of how coaches started to view freshmen. They're like, oh, hey, we should play these guys. Yeah, they're young, but they're pretty good too. So I think it just, you saw a lot of seismic change as a result of, you know, not just Mike, but also Patrick Ewing and all the talent that was in that game.
John Martin joins us from The Athletic. He's an NCAA writer, also on air at 92.9 ESPN in Memphis. And, John, it is interesting how usually there's something that changes, and all of a sudden people are like, oh, maybe we can give this guy more of an opportunity. Yeah. And like in life, once you have an opportunity, some people are able to thrive even more. Did you happen to watch the replay of that championship game recently? And after Jordan's bucket, can you explain to me maybe one of the worst giveaways I've ever seen?
It really was. Now, I will tell you this. With the replaying of, and you guys probably didn't have to deal with this, but during the re-airing of that game, we were interrupted by President Trump.
Okay.
So with the State of the Union or whatever the hell it would have been, we didn't get a chance to do the second half, basically. So we were preempted. But obviously I've seen that play. I mean, it's up there with Chris Webber's timeout. And it's funny how it doesn't really get talked about that much, right? Like, you don't really hear people talk about when Fred Brown just, I mean, inexplicably, like, totally just handed the ball to James Worthy. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. If I didn't know better, I would have thought he was shaving points. But it is certainly, it's one of the all-time gaffes in sports, and yet it is somehow over the years been totally buried. I don't know how. I mean, you just don't see that kind of thing happen. And I read an article when I was doing research for this. Fred Brown is, you know, he's moved on with his life, and, you know, they ended up winning. I don't know if he was a part of the team, but they ended up winning the championship a couple of years later. But certainly it was, I mean, you just don't see things like that. It was one of the all-time mistakes in sports.
Yeah, like, I watched it, I was just like, man, did he, like, I don't know if the guy called for the ball or anything, but it was definitely one of the more egregious ones you've ever seen. But, you know, hey, what's what happens when they're amateurs?
Yeah,
it's a little bit different,
right? It's a
high-pressure
situation, right? Easy for us to sit back and say, how do you do that? I mean, it's, you know, you're down 1 point in a, you know, freaking national championship game. You know, stuff's going to happen.
For sure. Now, going to Michael Jordan, and you look at his college degree and how it kind of started today and then it moved on, and March Madness is, I don't know if that was the jumping off point necessarily of everything to see, you know, the multi-billion dollar industry that it is now. But, you know, you talk about giving young guys the opportunity, so maybe in a roundabout way it was. But when you look at just kind of the growth of the finances from when it was in 82 until now, which really isn't that long when you think about it in the big picture of life.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a big, you know, it's a big conversation, and something I think that you know, you can draw political lines. I mean, you could draw socioeconomic lines. It's really something that, you know, I think more and more it gets harder to watch, in the sense that you know that this is basically unpaid labor. I mean, and I think it's becoming more of a sort of awareness in the American sports fans' consciousness that these guys are basically out there doing it for free while the NCAA makes billions of dollars on their backs. I mean, yes, they get room and board, and yes, they get scholarships, but I mean, the vast majority of them, you know, could probably get those scholarships from an academic standpoint or in-state or whatever the case may be, and they're getting a small stipend. I think you're starting to see, you know, I think it's going to change. You know, I think it's going to really change. Obviously, it's a real fight right now with the, you know, the name, the image, the likeness. You're seeing some states, Florida, California, you know, are really trying to get these athletes compensated. And I don't know if we'll ever go to an Olympic model, but you know, things are on the precipice, I truly believe, of changing, and they should change. I mean, there's just no these guys can't go out and get normal jobs. I mean, if you and I are in college, and we're you know, journalism majors or broadcast majors, we can go out and we can pursue jobs that pay us while we still go to class. And these students, realistically, they can't do that because their schedules are so demanding. Practice, two-a-days, nutrition, class. They just can't do that realistically. So I do think it's time, and that conversation's being had. And hopefully, you know, in the next few years, we do see that change.
Yeah, and you know, it'll be interesting. Well, the whole sporting landscape is going to change. I think moving forward. Any idea how this might impact the NCAA?
You mean COVID-19?
Yeah, like, you know, the longer everything goes, and now, you know, they don't have summer sports for the majority of those universities, but, you know, I don't know. We don't know if September, October, November, there's going to be sporting events, right? And that's where they make a lot of their money. So what happens to NCAA if all of a sudden there's no sports in September and October, November?
Well, I mean, it's catastrophic. I mean, it's absolutely catastrophic if we don't have college football in the fall. I mean, it just, there's no other way to say it. I mean, these universities, especially as it relates to their athletic budgets, which depending on the school are absolutely massive. I mean, they depend on the revenue that they get from college football. And I'm sure, you know, there's an insurance policy, right? But it's not going to come close to making them whole. It's not going to come close to, you know, replicating the amount of money that they would have otherwise made. So, you know, I am sure that they are exhausting every option, much like the NBA. Now, the NBA is going to come back. I mean, the NBA, you're hearing it more and more, whether it's from Mark Cuban, whether it's from reporters. I mean, all the smoke is there that the NBA is going to come back one way or another. And I think the reason why they will come back is because owners are going to push for it. And I think the majority of players are going to push for it because they don't want to see their salaries impacted. They don't want to see next year's salary cap go below $100 million. They want to come back and they want to make that money. I mean, you're dealing with amateur sports here. There's a lot more that goes into it. They're not compensated. They are amateurs. There's liability there. So, you know, it's a totally different ball game when you're talking about college sports. That being the case, I assume they're going to do everything they can. I think we're not even talking about fans in the stands. I think that is totally out of the window. But the television contracts are such that they're worth playing because it's a good product on television and the revenue is coming from TV anyway. That's where a lot of the, you know, a lot of those, you know, tens of millions of dollars contracts come from. So I think if there is a way to do it healthily, whether that's point of contact testing, which you hope that we've gotten to that point in 4 or 5 months, that it will happen, but it's on the rocks for sure. We live in a world of constant anxiety and uncertainty. This is no different, but I think that's what keeps athletic directors up at night is, oh my God, what the hell am I going to do? I mean, these universities could be flipped upside on their head if they don't have college football. They could go belly up. It could be that drastic.
John, I really appreciate your time. Great article on Michael Jordan. Thanks for this.
Yeah, man, anytime, man. Thanks, guys.